interesting that you're on today because a caller in the last hour wanted to know why you have not coached in the National Basketball Association since your departure from the Toronto Raptors. And I'm curious too. And I don't think we've ever really focused on your thoughts as to what has happened in the intervening years. But tell us.
How much time do we have?
All you need, pal.
Okay, well, let's just go to the heart of it. I started coaching when I left the NBA as a high school coach. Mm-hmm. And I go coach as a high school coach, and then I survived the college. I go to Long Beach for a year, and then I'm at the University of Dayton for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And while at the University of Dayton, I worked the NBA combine camp in Chicago. And I was fortunate enough, a guy that I'd played against, Lee Rose, who was at Purdue, was running the combine and was impressed enough with what I did with the players that he hired me through Dale Harris, through the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. So I spent what I thought was going to be the kickoff point that I never wanted to coach in the pros. I wanted to coach in college.
Right.
Because I didn't feel that you could consistently defend in the pros if you weren't extremely talented. So in the course of the time I was with Milwaukee, Don Nelson, I ran across some of his old notebooks, and he had a numbering system. So I learned this numbering system, which equated to defining what was going on in the court. So I was more comfortable with being able to coach defensively on a bad team.
Okay.
Great time in Milwaukee. Senator Cole, John Steinmiller, the whole group there, just outstanding people, lived across the street from the lake with the kids. It was awesome. I got a call from Isaiah, and he asked me to come up and help him organize what was going on here. And I basically came up as a consultant friend. You know, let's figure this thing out. And I think it was 6 weeks later, I went from consultant to interim head coach, and Isaiah was gone. And Runwall said to me, I want you to put the same plan in place that you're going to put in for Isaiah. And I trust you to do that. And it was a really bad situation. The situation I came in is nothing like what you see the Raptors today in the ACC. We were playing in the Sky Dome.
Yep.
We were practicing at York University.
Yep.
The players complained about everything to the agents. I think Glenn spent more time dealing with agents complaining about what was wrong with the team and the community and the attitude. No ESPN, which was a big deal. And we move into the building, and
thank you.
We go through a process where we don't have a practice facility. And at that time, the Phoenix Suns had the great practice facility connected to where they played. And at that time, we asked them, you know, how much is it going to cost for a practice facility? They said, I think, $2.4 million. We traded three players and took $1 million for each player and asked them, is that enough to get a practice facility? I think they were offended by that because they said, well, we got to get approval from the board. But my mentality coming from living in a housing project as the oldest of seven kids is that you find a way to fix it. You find a way to get through and move on. So through 2 years, we built a really good process for evaluating players. It caused friction between me and the personnel staff because I'm an athlete guy. I believe I can take an athlete and teach him how to dribble and shoot.
Now, when you say creative friction, did it create friction between you and Glenn?
No, it did not, because Glenn was the master at managing my intensity with the weaknesses of his personnel staff.
Gotcha.
All right? I mean, he knew how to do it. He knew when to ignore me. He knew when to listen to me. Actually, Grunwald's weaknesses were my strengths, and my weaknesses were his strengths.
So you complimented each other.
We complimented each other.
Okay.
We did. So we built the team based off of making decisions on athletes and the friction it caused. So I knew that friction was there. So when they offered me a new contract, I asked to put in my contract that they couldn't offer the assistant GM job to anyone before they offered it to me. That was in my contract.
Okay.
All right. No extra money, but I would have a choice. Because at the time, the deciding factor for me was that what people don't know is that I had custody of my two oldest boys. And my sister was watching them while I coached the team. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I made the mistakes of the lawsuit and we got in the playoffs, all right, and created a distraction, all right?
You acknowledge that was a mistake.
That was a mistake because
okay.
What I've learned watching the playoff, a team doesn't need a distraction.
Right.
There's so much going on, you don't need one,
yeah.
All right? So that distraction, so I knew what the landscape was involving re-signing Tracy McGrady. So we had our normal end-of-the-year exit meeting. And I got my tongue lashing, this is what we need to do, we'll get through it, we just need you to stay quiet. And so I asked that if I assist in getting Tracy McGrady re-signed, all right? And yet you have to understand that Tracy McGrady calls me Uncle Butch. He doesn't call me Coach because of our relationship I set up his apartment. I set up the cleaning lady.
Yeah.
The meals delivered to him, all right? And I believe, and he believes, I was the best first coach that he could have had to get him to where he needed to go. But I also knew that there was an agent, a street agent, all right, that managed Tracy all through the process, Alvis Smith, all right? I still talk to Alvis every other week now, all right? He's been begging me forever, get back in the business.
Yeah.
All right? So I asked in the meeting that clause that I had, if I get Tracy re-signed, all right, would they execute the clause? All right?
Mm-hmm.
They said they would get back to me. The next thing I know, someone's called me in a paper saying, you've gone after Glenn's job. All right?
Which is not true. What you wanted to exercise was an assistant general manager's job.
Which was already
with Glenn.
Yeah, no, it's no extra money. It was,
yeah.
All right? So basically what I was trying to do was give myself a soft place to land or have the choice. But it was already negotiated in my contract 6 months earlier.
Right.
It wasn't adding any new wording, and they weren't going to pay me an extra dime for it.
Right.
All right? But I wrote a letter in 2010. A friend of mine, Joe Cervellotti, sent me the Toronto Star newspaper and says, I can't believe what Richard Petty's saying. I wrote a letter to Ontario Teachers Pension Fund and said, hey, look, this has got to stop. This did not happen this way, all right? So when people ask, the coaching, part of it has to do with I've got Richard Petty calling the writer, columnist from the Toronto Sun saying Butch is after Glenn's job, all right? There was never a conversation that I had privately with Richard Petty pertaining to, or anyone else, Larry Tannenbaum, Steve Stavro, that I wanted Glenn's job. I couldn't do Glenn's job, all right?
Did Glenn think you wanted his job?
No, I don't think Glenn ever thought I wanted his job.
Okay.
All right? Glenn knew what it was. Glenn knew that I was angry, all right? I was angry because when the whole Marcus Camby stuff started, no one in the front office stood up for me. No one said a word. And so my thought process was that I'm away from my kids coaching this team. How much value has been created in this team from the day you gave me the job to this day, and not one of you will speak up for me. So
that pissed you off.
Historically, that says, if you can, CYA.
Mm.
All right? So basically, out of that meeting, and basically when all the stuff came out, because not only did they call the writer, they called the players and told the players before they even called me and let me know.
Who's right? They?
Well, I don't know who. It was supposed to be anonymous that the story leaked out, all right? But no one ever owned it until Richard Petty put in this article in the Star that said, that I went after Glenn's job. So I wrote a letter to
the board
and said, hey, look, guys, this never happened, all right? Anyone that knows me knows that I never had a relationship with Richard, and it wasn't because, I'm the mole. We go in the office at 5:30 in the morning. Mm. We start our film work. I don't have a relationship upstairs. As far as I was concerned, that was always Glenn's issue.
Glenn went upstairs. You talked to Glenn.
All right. So, if there's something I did that Glenn didn't like, he'd come down and tell me. If he's something I really didn't like, he'd bring Stavro with me, and Stavro said, cut the crap. All right? I mean, yeah. it was real simple, and it worked. But the perception they let out to the league was that a brown man had gone after a white man's job, all right? And 29 of the teams are in the States. And that's not something you want out, all right, if you think you're really good at something. And it makes people afraid. Because not only, people know that not only can I coach a basketball team, but I can look at the analytics. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe we were one of the first teams, if not the first team in 1998, to build an analytical model that measured the energy created by a player in space and also accounted for his salary to tell us what we could do in our $36 million cap at the time. So when they decided to let me go, all I did was call Ian, and forgive me, Ian, I forget your last name and I shouldn't, but he's the lawyer. And I said, look, you know, the way my contract pays out, it's going to pay me out in 3 years. Can you move that to a fourth year? And he said, no problem. We moved it out. And I basically got in a car, drove to Cincinnati, Ohio, and hung out with my boys for pretty much 3 years. Because for me, it's like, okay, do you want to make, you know, do you want to go coach?
You were getting paid anyway.
I was getting paid anyway.
We got to bring our next guest in. But right. I mean, quickly, have you had any interviews for jobs, NBA jobs?
No.
Do you believe you're blacklisted?
Yes, but it's been my own fault because I didn't fight.
Do you still aspire to coach in the NBA?
I am going to coach. I just don't know where.
You said you had aspirations to coach. Your real aspiration was to coach at the college level. Do you think that's more likely than the NBA?
No, I think that's less likely because we're so comfortable in Canada. I would prefer to coach in a small community in Canada than a small community in the States.
Fair enough. We'll continue this conversation.
I understand it was ad lib, but I mean,
I appreciate it. I appreciate your candor. And I think a lot of people, because there are a lot of people out there that look at the job you did when you coached the Toronto Raptors and don't know you as well as I do. And I don't think we've ever really addressed this situation directly as this.
But Bob, the way I really felt about it, if somebody wanted to win that bad, they would call me.